You are listening to Radio Aryan.
Welcome to SS Britannia. Today's date is Monday, July the 31st, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, I'm joined today by the Devonshire fascist Subal from the Aryan Spring. Subal, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm fine. I'm a little bit traumatized because yesterday you forced me to watch a certain piece of BBC propaganda. Which is teaching our children that, Romans were black and that they married white women and that they had white slaves and things like this. And, I'm a little bit triggered by that, but I'm slowly getting over it. I don't really like to watch BBC propaganda, but I suppose it's kind of my job to do so. And you forced me to watch it, you bastard. So, yeah.
It was absolutely horrific. Horrific, really shocking bit of propaganda there. And it didn't stop there either. I mean, this was Roman Britain, but apparently it goes on past that to Celtic Britain and Norman Britain. And it's all got Negroes in all of it. They've got Negro priests that are converting the white Anglo-Saxons. They've got black people fighting in the Celtic army, blacks fighting in the Norman army. And in this particular one, the Roman Britain, they've got a black guy who is a Roman consul, I believe. He's got the outfit on that he's a Roman consul, and he's responsible for building Hadrian's Wall. He's got a mudshark wife, two niglets of varying shades of colour. And one of these niglets gets mugged by a white man. And this is what our children are being taught in their schools. They're being taught that blacks came over here. We were all savages until then. They brought us all the engineering technology, showed us how to put one brick on top of the other and build a wall. And we repaid them by stealing from their children. It's completely the opposite of reality. And I believe, Paul Joseph Watson has spoken about this as well, and some leftist professor apparently had an argument with him, and according to the mainstream media, made him look ridiculous. But that's probably because he was unaware of the actual facts behind this, because there are mention of Africans in our history books, but they're talking about Vandals and Carthaginians. North Africa in the year zero, 50 years before that, and right up until about the 4th or the 5th century, North Africa was white. It was part of the Roman Empire. It was the breadbasket of the Roman Empire. And compare that to today. Africa was once the breadbasket of Europe when the Romans were in charge, when white people were in charge. And the Vandals went in there, invaded, took over, because the Romans had become degenerate. And the Vandals took it over, and then the Vandals came over to Britain as well, and they were white, and it's spoken about in our history books as the King of Africa. The King of Africa came to Britain, and of course these modern day historians will lie and try and pretend that the King of Africa was a Negro, and that the people that came over from Africa that are called Africans, they're called Africans, that they're white, the same as Negroes are called British today, but they're Negroes, but they're being called British. This has gone on for a long time, and we called these white people that came over from Africa, we called them Africans in our history books. And that's where this lie has come from, and it is a lie. And the Negroes never even managed to put a sail on a boat, let alone come over here to Britain. And we've got Diodorus Siculus writing in 50 BC, and he's writing about Ethiopia, and he writes about the civilized white people that are there, that are very much like the Romans and the Greeks. And then he talks about this uncivilizable savage who runs around naked and digs around in the ground for worms to eat. And he's completely untamable, wild savage. And he pretty much implies that not even of any use as a slave. You just want to ignore these particular specimens of two-legged beings, basically. So that's the truth of it. And yet we're being told that these Negroes come over to Britain and civilize the white savages. Complete opposite of reality.
Yeah. And it's tricky, isn't it? I mean, for us, it's kind of almost laughable. I mean, it's like a comedy, isn't it, when we see these kinds of things. But if you're like a 5-year-old child or a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old, and, you know, you don't really have any education because you don't get it. I mean, what education do you have if your mum and dad don't teach you anything? You don't learn anything off the TV, and you obviously don't learn anything in school. Then you might start thinking that this is true. You might start thinking, well, yeah, there were black people in Rome and all throughout the Roman Empire, and they were treated equally to the whites, and that's it. And it's really quite horrific if you think about it. I mean, it's one thing that we're getting genocided, but we're also just going to get completely wiped out from the history books. If the Jews win this fight, then in 200 years' time, people won't even know that white people ever existed. I can imagine it would just be, a giant mass of brown-skinned slaves ruled over by a bunch of Jews in Israel. That's what they actually want. That's what these people are actually planning for and aiming for. The Jewish revolutionaries have always been these year zero activists. They did this in, I think they did it in the communist takeover in China, actually. They tried to reset the calendar to year zero. I'm pretty sure they did it in Cambodia as well. Just total year zero, wipe the slate, destroy all past history, and start again. And that's what they will do to us if we let them. I mean, that they're already doing it in America, knocking down all the white Confederate statues. They're doing it in England too, taking down various statues. So yes, it's a big problem. It's quite horrific, and it's quite horrible to see that. It's just quite horrible to think that, you know, little innocent young white children are being fed this kind of propaganda.
Well, at year zero, they did that to Germany after the war. They pretended there was no history before now. They burned all the National Socialist books and locked up all the National Socialist teachers, anyone that was involved in it, and banned them from talking about it at all, and pretty much did a year zero to Germany. And the Germans still don't know the truth about their history. But it would have been bad. It's bad enough just to shoehorn in these Negroes and pretend that there were Negroes in among the Romans, but they didn't have to make the white people out to be pickpockets and thieves. Mm. I mean, that's just vicious, isn't it? That's vindictive to do that. I was prepared for a shock of seeing these Negroes, but to then make out that the whites were thieving off these Romans, it was really the other way around. It was the Romans that were demanding tribute from the Britons, but to have them stealing from Negroes, that is the complete reversal of the way that things are. And it's this behavior that led to the American Negroes thinking that they were responsible for building the pyramids and they were the ancient Egyptians. Because the Negroes didn't have any history, they didn't have any written language, they had no written books, they had nothing pretty much. And they wanted to integrate them in America. They decided that they would have to make up a history for them to try and improve their self-esteem, because they thought that once they had a higher self-esteem, then they would do better at education and in learning. So they lied to them, and they said that they built the pyramids and they had these wonderful civilizations. And that's why you get Negroes thinking that's actual fact. And you'll get the same with this now. You'll get Negroes claiming to have been part of the Roman Empire. Like Hannibal that came over from Africa and attacked Rome. They think that he was a Negro. But because he came from Africa, this is where this confusion all sets in. It's the same confusion that we have today, where people are named after the geography that they come from, the geographical area, rather than being named after their ethnicity. And this is a problem that goes right back to biblical times. It's a problem that confuses DNA studies. When people get their DNA tested, or when they do DNA tests on the remains of bodies that were found in geographical areas, they'll say things like Middle Eastern. And the Middle East itself, the Levant, has had different peoples in it, depending on what time period you're talking about. So to just say Middle Eastern really doesn't, it doesn't tell you anything. People should be specified by their ethnicity. And this was the origin of the word British, because it came from Brutus. It came from a man himself. That was the patriarch of the Britons, was Brutus. And it's the same as the names that are given the people in the Bible. And the Druids, and our society was all based on showing your heritage and who your father was from 10 years back. To be a Druid, you had to be a free man for 10 generations, and you had to be able to name all those generations to prove that you were part of this caste. It had nothing to do with where you were born, and everything to do with who your parents are. Nature is far more important than nurture. It's what you are born with what counts. If you're not up to the standard with what you're actually born with, then you haven't got a hope in hell of reaching for the stars, as it were, because it's just not going to be possible. And this is why the Negroes were never able to come up with a written language, never able to come up with a sail on a boat. I believe they never even invented the wheel.
No, they didn't. It's the great lie of the tabula rasa. Again, the blank slate. You can turn anybody into a musician. You can turn anybody into a genius. You can apparently Karl Marx used to write about this sort of thing. He said after the communist revolution, we'll have a Beethoven and a Mozart on every street corner. Everybody will become super perfect and enlightened and superhuman. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. Some people are born smart, some people are born dumb, some people are born beautiful, some people are born ugly. That's the way it is. That's always been the way it is. And that's the difference, really, or one of the major differences between the right wing and the left wing. The right tends to realize that mankind is a fallen creature who has his faults, and that we just have to do the best that we can. And the left wing idealizes and dreams. This is why the two greatest left wing, or two of the greatest left wing speeches or pieces of propaganda in the 20th century was Martin Luther King's speech, where he starts saying, "I have a dream." And then we have John Lennon's "Imagine." So, imagine all the people. And it's just like, well, yeah, you're in a dream world, mate.
Total ignorance of reality, isn't it?
Yeah, you're dreaming about Africans in flying flying pyramids and all this kind of stuff. And because Africans, they have a high self-esteem, they have this low IQ, and they think a lot of themselves, which I think may just be a valuable, in a way, a valuable thing for them to have naturally, because if you have to have some kind of, if you're going to survive in the jungle in Africa and not get eaten by a lion, I suppose you have to have a bit of oomph, haven't you? I mean, if they really realised how dumb they are, they probably would be sitting around being depressed.
Well, yeah, that's it. That's more like it, isn't it? I mean, if they actually knew the truth of it, they would be sitting around depressed. That's why they've got this highly inflated opinion of themselves. Yeah, and that's been proved by studies. You know, they've given Negroes tests and then said, "How well do you think you did in this test?" And they always estimate that they did in the test a lot better than they actually did, which is one of the ways that you can show this, that they have this highly inflated opinion of themselves. And if you do then go on to tell them that they are better than they actually are, then they start getting ideas above their station. We've had this black student head of Cambridge's equality group this week who's been saying that all white people are racist and saying that the black rioters in Dalston should be going after the whites, how white people had colonized that area. How can white people colonize their own country? But he's claimed that white people had colonized that area. And the only reason he's at university is because he was given a scholarship. And who paid for the scholarship? White people. It's the same as these Negroes that are calling for the statue of Cecil Rhodes to be pulled down. And how did they get into university? Well, on a Cecil Rhodes scholarship. So we help these people out. We tell them that they're better than they are. We educate them. We put them in our top universities. And then they just attack us. Then they're never going to be thankful for it and turn into civilized people, because that's not what they were created to be. It's like expecting a tiger to turn into a pussycat, isn't it?
Yeah, they're very ungrateful. Incredibly ungrateful. And it's really actually, it's a type of cruelty. I mean, people think that, we white nationalists are cruel and that we hate black people and everything. Actually, I think the people on the left are the ones that are really cruel to these blacks, because they're giving them false dreams and false aspirations, and they're never going to, and they're agitating them, and they're never going to be able to achieve, you know, the dreams that are being placed before them, and they're going to just get frustrated, and they're going to constantly hit the wall, and they're going to, you know, ultimately blame it on the white man. Right, because everybody's telling them that they are equal to us and that they can achieve these things. So when they don't, they just blame it on racism, and you just get racial conflict. I mean, I have never been to Africa, but people do say that if you go to Africa and you talk to the people there, they're much more peaceful and at ease with themselves and comfortable in their homeland with their own people, because they don't have all this garbage being shoved down their throats. And most, I mean, I've heard this, that most Africans, they look at the behavior and the attitude of Africans in Europe and Africans in America, and you just think, well, this is just, you know, just disgusting, awful, arrogant behavior. So it's a cruelty. It's like you're dangling the carrot in front of somebody, and but then they can never take it. And I also, I have to say, I used to be a little bit like this myself in my more liberal days, not with Africans, but before I understood what IQ was, before I looked it up, because I mean, I've got slightly above average IQ. And when I finally did an IQ test and I looked at my IQ and you know, saw my position on the bell curve, it's like it suddenly dawned on me. It's like, oh, okay. You know, I get it. That's why nobody knows what the hell I'm talking about, right? That's why people don't understand me. And all of a sudden I just realized, because I think, you know, back when in my younger days, I used to talk not to black people, but to white people. Like, talk to people who were perhaps less intelligent and talk to them about subject matters which, I don't know, they just would not be interested in or not capable of being understanding, or, you know, this kind of thing, or encouraging people to go ahead and achieve things and do things when they're really perhaps not capable of doing that. Perhaps a lot of that is just projection, you know, projecting my desires and dreams on other people, wanting them to succeed. But, it's a cruelty. It's a cruelty, and it's a lack of, respect and understanding of who you're talking to and what, you know, how able are they to understand what you're saying? And, you know, what are their interests? What are their desires? What are they able to achieve in their life? It's just, it's cruel for them. People say that we're cruel and that we hate blacks. I don't hate black people. I just want them to go back to Africa.
Just want to be separate from them. I mean, they have no, the people that advocate against us and call us racist, they have no respect for diversity, no respect for it at all, because that's what we're really talking about here is the fact that white people are different from blacks. And if Negroes are going to measure themselves against white people, then they're always going to be in a state of failure. They're always going to be failing. And because they're told that they're not, it's not an inbuilt thing, it's because they haven't tried hard enough. If only they tried a little bit harder, they'd be as good as the whites. And if only the whites didn't keep them down, then they'd be as good as the whites. They look at that and they think, well, I've tried my hardest. I still haven't got anywhere. Well, it must be the white guy that's keeping me down. It must be the white man that's keeping me down because we're all equal. And then the Negro gets frustrated. And then he does what he does when he gets frustrated in Africa, and he burns things down, and he burns his own people and goes on the rampage, which is what we're seeing in Dalston at the moment. Only if you take what's happening in Dalston as a case study, I mean, what we've got there is really one of these Darwin Awards. You've got a Negro, he's a drug dealer, he's got a sack full of 10 bags of crack, he's been caught by the police and he swallowed them. That's what he's done, and yet the Negro will look at that and just think, well, that's a young Negro lad that's died. That's the police's fault. He cannot comprehend that selling crack is illegal, and it's his own fault for swallowing it and choosing to do that as a job in life. That's what he aspired to be, as a crack dealer. The BBC interviewed some of these Dalston Negroes, and they were saying, well, they all have to carry knives and they all have to sell drugs because they don't want to work. They don't want to work for the system. So it's your fault. It's your fault because you haven't taught them how to work for the system. That's pretty much what this young mulatto lad was saying to the BBC. And of course, I've been looking for it to try and find this interview so that I could put it somewhere so people could see it. Because just actually listening to what this guy said, it really exposed them. And the BBC have removed it, and they wrote it up in an article, and they subtly edited it so that the guy didn't, you know, so he wasn't actually saying what he was saying. Because what he was saying is, we all carry knives, we all sell drugs because we don't want to work. And that's the white man's fault, somehow.
Yeah, they frame their criminal activity as some kind of political rebellion against the system. I mean, it's entirely dishonest, of course. And that's another characteristic of the left, of course, is just complete refusal to accept responsibility for your actions. And generally, you find that these types of people that break the law, people that have sexual perversions, people that steal, people that sell drugs, etc., 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 they all have a moral justification for doing what it is they're doing, whether it's a case of I had a bad childhood, or I'm black, or I'm a woman, or, you know, I was born gay, or whatever the case. It's always a case of it's not my fault, it's not my fault, it's not my fault, blah 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 blah. And that really is the attitude of the left. And the attitude of the subversive class and the criminal class. Because, of course, if you do accept responsibility for your actions, then what happens is you won't commit crime, and you won't, you know, engage in sexual perversions, and you won't, you know, be weird and strange and subversive. You will rise above it. You will have a, because if you accept responsibility for the situation that you're in and your actions, then you have a sense of moral being and a sense of higher moral being, and you are ethically stronger, and you will succeed in life. It's people who just refuse to take the blame. They have to blame somebody else. Even in a comical sense, you have these blacks, they're on the streets, they're rioting. Why? Because some drug dealer swallowed some crack cocaine. Come on, guys.
Diane Abbott is there, supporting them, saying, oh, we must have justice. And the father of the dead Negro is saying, well, we've got it all on video. We've got all the evidence. Well, yeah, the video shows him swallowing his drugs. and then he became ill and died. I mean, that's what happens if you swallow hundreds of pounds worth of crack cocaine. Your likelihood is that you're going to overdose and die. He should have bagged his drugs up better, or better still, not been selling them. Although, I mean, he's a mainly black area, he's just selling it to other Negroes. I mean, Diane Abbott
could have got a job in McDonald's.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be mainly what they do, isn't it? But Diane Abbott, she's our shadow home secretary. She's literally been put forward by the Labour Party as if the government get into power, then she's going to be the second most important minister in the government, responsible for everything that goes on in Britain. And you've got this black racist, black nationalist that will support other Negroes no matter what it is against the British establishment. And she's so racist that there's a poster of her, a Labour poster of her, saying that she's going to do her best for blacks. She's going to do everything she can for black people. And yet, if anyone says, I want to do the best that I can for white people, well, that's hate speech. And if you say that in a political party, that's it. That's your career over and done with. And yet she was there protesting along with the rest of these protesters, stood there by a sign which was saying, stop the police and stop the immigration officers as well. Down with the immigration officers. She obviously doesn't understand what justice is either. Negroes don't understand what justice is. They understand that they've been hurt in some way, and they just want revenge for that. And they see justice and the rule of law as a way for them to get revenge. They don't care if it's actual true justice or whether it's false justice, so long as they get their own way. I mean, you could see that in America with Trayvon Martin, where Zimmerman, I think he shot Trayvon Martin, but he was exonerated of the crime. I mean, this Trayvon Martin had attacked him. He punched his head into the sidewalk. He was on his way to rob someone. He was high on some drug that they take over there. And Zimmerman was exonerated and he was found innocent. And yet the blacks all still think that he was guilty. They all still think that Trayvon Martin was an innocent young lad that was killed, even though the court case found that Zimmerman was entirely innocent. And they see this as a travesty of justice. Travesty of justice. Because they didn't get their revenge. Because they don't understand law. They don't understand the golden rule. They don't understand do unto others as you would be done by yourself. Because they're not capable of putting themselves in somebody else's shoes and understanding how somebody else might feel. It's not a part of the Negro psyche, and it never has been. If it had ever been a part of the Negro psyche, they would have had a system of law, and they've never had a system of law. So, you know, this proves it. Someone did a video this week. Morgoth wrote an article about him, and Morgoth was attacking the skeptic community, and this video was attacking Rage After Storm, I think her name was. And the video started off with him attacking an article that I had written for the Daily Stormer quite some time back. And it was pointing this out, that Negroes are not capable of thinking of abstract concepts. And this, I think Kraut and T or something his name is, but he just came out with a load of ad hominems. He couldn't disprove any of what I'd said. And the fact that Negroes never ever came up with a system of law, that proves to you that they are incapable of thinking of the golden rule. Otherwise they would have done.
Yeah, I remember, I haven't seen that particular video, but I did watch Rage After Storm's race video, which got deleted off the internet and put back on it or whatever, the video that caused the whole controversy. And she, she did make that point, which I thought was quite interesting, that if you look at native African languages, they don't have these abstract terms. We don't have the kind of abstract terminology that the white European languages have. It's just totally lacking. I mean, they're capable of talking about physical objects like trees and tigers and milk and wood and water and what have you, But when it comes to higher ideals like justice, honor, faith, etc., 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 higher metaphysical concepts, their brains just they're not used to thinking in those terms. So no, yeah, you're right. They don't have that high IQ. They don't have that ability to think deeply about abstract thought. It's a very the language issue is something which has interested me for a long, long time, because I used to teach English in foreign languages, and I always found it actually when I used to teach English in Brazil, funnily enough, I used to teach English with a grammar book which I bought in India. And I know the audience is going to think that's very laughable. But the thing about the Indians is, the Indians, for all their faults, they do have a respect for tradition, you see. And so this grammar book, it was like a grammar book from the 1950s, right? It had all the old terms for nouns and verbs and adverbs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it was like an old English grammar, like kind of proper, you know? Because when I was teaching English in Brazil, I went into the shop to try and buy a book to teach with, and it's just full of garbage. I mean, it's what they've done to the English language in the last century, what these Jews have done to it. They've just totally, totally ripped it to pieces. They've torn out the grammatical system that our entire language is built upon and replaced it with a bunch of crap. Be quiet. I mean, there's no other word for it. And so it becomes impossible for anybody to properly teach English to foreigners. And it becomes impossible for them to learn because the framework is not there. And I know English teachers, Brazilian English teachers, who they've been teaching and speaking English for 10, 15 years. They can't speak English properly. They can't get the pronouns right. And it's not because of low IQ, because these people are, you know, white-ish. They're basically Portuguese. It's not that. I mean, there is a lot of race mixing in Brazil. Well, you have to go there and see for yourself. You can tell who's, you know, people. Some a lot of the rich are basically Portuguese-looking, and then you see the other half-caste. But it's not because of racial problems so much. It's just that the language has been butchered and torn apart by the Jews. The way that it's taught has been torn apart by the Jews. And what happens, basically what happened in brief is that instead of teaching a top-down or a prescriptive method of language, instead of saying this is how what English should be and you should speak English like this, what they do is they go out into the world and they look at how people speak in ordinary situations and they say, well, this is how English is really spoken. And so you should just copy that. So you end up teaching people slang. You end up teaching people ghetto talk. You end up teaching people all kinds of, you know, grammatical mistakes because that's how ordinary people speak most of the time. And then that gets codified by the academics and it creates a whole cycle. So you get Oxford University and other, you know, prestigious liberal universities, they just churn out grammar books and English teaching books, which is just full of slang. And they tore apart the eight parts of speech. There used to be eight types of word, and it used to be a system where you could analyze every single type of word, and it would be either a noun or a verb or an adverb or an adjective or et cetera, et cetera. Now there's like 11 types of speech, or 11 or 12 types of word, or 13. With different funny little names that they've made up. When we had eight parts of speech for 2,000 years or 2,500 years, it came all the way down from the Greeks, and they just threw it out in the last 50 years. And so, yeah, the point I'm getting at is the English language has been butchered, and when you butcher the language, it's very much a case of 1984. It's thought speak. It's new speak. You are destroying people's ability to think, the framework to create ideas in your head is being ripped apart because you don't have the vocabulary and you don't have the grammatical ability to say what it is you want to say. Yeah, there you go. That was a bit of a rant about language. It's really an awful thing, but yeah, as you say, the blacks, they're not capable of abstract thought.
I've tried to make it so that English can be understood by them, and in order to do that, they've had to downgrade it, basically. And if they can't understand these concepts because they don't have words for them in their own language, then what we have to do is cut back on our use of them ourselves to equalize us, which obviously lowers the vocabulary and prevents us from being able to think in the ways that our ancestors were able to think in. And this is why Negroes are incapable of maintaining anything, because you maintain something so that it doesn't break down in the future, and the future is an abstract concept. This is why they won't do the repair work on the power station over there in South Africa. Oh, well, it's working. It's not broken down. Why would I need to do anything to it? It's not broken down. That's the way they think about it. There's a really good lecture called, I think it's called African Language, African Mind. It's an American Renaissance lecture. And I think the guy might have a bit of a speech impediment or something, but what he's actually talking about is fantastic. He lived over there for years, and he basically looked at the language that they had, the dictionary that they had, the amount of words they had in Swahili, and saw that it was a fraction of the amount of words that we have in English. And you can only think in the words that you have. So if you have a limited vocabulary like that, that means that your thoughts are limited in the same way. And what we're doing by saying that we are equal to them, and by teaching everyone to a standard that Negroes can also understand, it means that we lower our own standards. And this is why, another reason why our average IQ is going down. It's not just because of the immigration, because we've got more low IQ people in the country. It's because the actual teaching that the children are being taught, the actual education has been dumbed down so that people with an average IQ of 65 can also understand it. And the people with the IQ of 65 are getting all the resources, and the young white children with the higher IQ are not getting any resources because they don't have to struggle so hard to keep up with it. So instead of producing excellence in our young white youth, we are producing averageness in the Negroes. I mean, we've stopped striving for excellence, and instead we're just wasting all our resources on trying to raise something up that cannot be raised up. People are what they are. The Negro is what God created the Negro to be. We can't turn him into a white man. And the idea that we could, or that the Negro would even want to be a white man, is really quite insulting. I mean, that's real racism, is to think that you're better than the Negro, and that the Negro would much rather be like you. And that's the way that the leftist mind thinks. That's why they go over there and interfere. So I have those charities going over there, giving them medicine, getting their water for them, finding their food for them. And the Negro is the only animal in the world that cannot find its own food and water. Every other creature on the planet can find its own food and water, not the Negro. We have to do that for him. We have to have adverts on the television tearing at our heartstrings, telling us the struggles that these poor Negro children have to go through every day to find a dirty puddle. And I mean, this was showed on Morgos Review a while back in the comments section. All these different advertisements over the last 10 years telling us about poor little Sambo, can't get hold of any water. Please just send £5 a month and you can find clean water for him. And this has been going on for decades. And they're still unable to dig their own wells. And that's another point. They're unable to douse. I mean, the white man is capable of finding his water because we've always had dowsers. We have dowsers in the army. They douse for oil, even. Dowsing is something that goes back thousands of years. We've always been able to find our own water. And we've always been able to set up water systems. Sorry, Subal, no. I missed what you were saying there.
Yeah, sorry, no, I just interject because you just surprised me with that, with mentioning the dowsing, because it's just one of those things which I remember hearing about or learning about when I was a child, and I'm like, oh, I haven't heard anybody mention that in 10 years. You know, it's one of those, you get the wood, don't you? And you hold it and you walk around with it, and you, it's like a little bit of magic, isn't it? Really. I haven't heard anybody talk about that in years.
It's a sixth sense that only Aryans have. Negroes don't have it. If Negroes had it, they wouldn't need all these advertisements. You know, they'd be able to find their own water, which they can't. We have to dig the wells for them. It's another one of the subtle ways that we differ from them.
There used to be a thing called horse whispering as well, didn't there? The people who train horses, and they whisper in their ears, and they can, kind of talk to them and get a feeling for them, and they understand them, and I don't know, all these little mystical things perhaps used to be part of our culture and slowly getting destroyed, getting wiped out, sadly.
Well, apparently we're colonizing Dalston, according to this Negro head of his student union or whatever. We're colonizing Dalston. It's a black area now. It shouldn't have any whites in it. So they've taken over these parts of our country and demanding that we don't go there, and they think these areas are their own. And the more they see these programs, these BBC programs telling them that they've always been here, they will believe it. They don't have the critical faculty to think, well, hang on a minute, that isn't actually true. It's of benefit to them to believe that, so they will repeat it. That's why they repeat the nonsense about them being in the flying pyramids and such like from what they were taught in America. It benefits them to think that. So it's the truth. They don't have the respect for the truth that we have. That's something I learned years ago before I even became a nationalist. I can remember watching a Louis Theroux program, and he was over in South Africa, and he was talking to these Negroes, and they were just boasting and lying. And I just thought, hang on a minute. Why are they boasting about these things? Why are they lying about these things? Do they not have any respect for what they're saying to people? And these Negroes were lying to their friends, lying about what they had, lying about what women they had, lying about what material possessions they had. And I just thought, well, you haven't actually got these things. So when you go home after talking to your friends, You're still going to be empty pocketed and not have these things that you said that you had. So what's the point in lying to them? And I just thought the way they think is completely different to the way that we think.
Yeah, it's an interesting, characteristic of the modern age, that there seems to have been somewhere along the line, we've drawn a division between, truth and honesty. And sometime during the Enlightenment, probably this idea of objective truth has arisen, or mathematical truth, as if truth in itself is somehow separate from morality. So, for example, the classic example would be 1 + 1 = 2. Well, it kind of is. I mean, for a very simple example like that, then yeah, it kind of is objectively separate from morality. But you have scientists who, they stand on this pedestal, professing themselves to be the masters and the owners of truth. But when it gets down to it, what you actually find is that many of these scientists are very, very dishonest. And they ignore facts about race. They ignore facts about just the fundamental reality of the universe. And so, yeah, when it comes down to it, really, in order to speak the truth, it's not a matter of just mathematical clarity or intellect or objectivity. No, it's a matter of courage, actually. Even within the sciences, it's a matter of courage. Even for social truth or for scientific truth or for whatever, you have to be honest, and you have to be willing to face the consequences of speaking the truth, And yeah, you know, you have to be in touch with God, I suppose. And that's why one of the names for God is the absolute truth. That's what people call him. Well, at least they do in the Hare Krishna movement. We call him the absolute truth because he is the truth. And if you are an honest person and you genuinely want to know what the nature of reality is and you genuinely want to seek that truth, then you're going to go on a path and you're going to, and the nature of reality will ultimately, it will reveal itself to you. And you'll probably end up, you know, being a white nationalist and doing a podcast or something.
Truth has the highest value, doesn't it? Truth has the highest value. And what we're being taught, what the facts of life are, that 1 + 1 = 2. But what we are being taught is that 1 + 2 = 2 as well. A white man and a white woman equals a white child. And we're being taught that a white man and a black woman, that also equals the same thing because it's just a human being. 1 + 1 = 2. And we're being told that 1 + 2 = 2 as well. We're all the same. So it doesn't matter who you breed with. It doesn't matter if you've got two fathers. I mean, that's what it boils down to, is having two. Have you got one father or have you got two fathers? If you've got one father, then you're part of a pure race. If you've got two fathers, then you are from a mixed race because you come from two original fathers. This is why there's that verse in the New Testament where the Jews are saying, well, we don't have two fathers, because that's what it means. Two fathers mean it means that you're a bastard. So 1 + 1 is equals 2, and 1 + 2, we're told today, also equals 2. It's the way that, yeah. I see it. But science itself is completely messed up in so many ways because of the people that are funding it, and anything that comes close to upsetting the diversity agenda, then that won't get funded. And it's not just diversity. I mean, cosmology is all messed up as well because they wanted to promote Einstein because he was a Jew. So they promoted Einstein and his theory of relativity.
And genius!
Then, yeah, anything that disproves that, they ignore. This is why all the NASA experiments that they do, they come out with a different result than they intended. And then they invent things to cover up for that. Instead of saying, well, the theory that we had was wrong and we have to change the theory, they keep the theory and just invent invisible stuff to compensate for it. And that's why we have 99% of the universe isn't there. 99% of the universe is dark matter and dark energy. And that all of that had to be invented to compensate for the results of the experiments that they were getting, which weren't turning out how they wanted them to. It's like the that CERN accelerator where they were looking for the God particle and they never found it. They what they were looking for doesn't exist, so they never found it. So they changed the parameters and said that it was actually something else. It's a huge waste of money that never actually found what it was supposed to be looking for. So they redefined what they were looking for and then made a big song and dance about it and said, oh yes, we have found it, but it wasn't what they originally were looking for that they found. And they had to invent more gobbledygook nonsense that doesn't exist to compensate for it. There's far more faith in things which don't exist in modern day science than there ever is in religion. I mean, religion is based on what you can see around you. I mean, even a child knows that there has to be a creator. And yet that just seems really obvious to me, that there has to be a creator of everything, and the creator of everything is God. And yet with science, we're told that 99% of the universe that we can't see, but it has to be there, and black holes have to be there, and the sun has to be a nuclear explosion, and it's all electric. If you look at the electric universe theory, Thunderbolts, I think the website is called, there's a lot of information on there, and the experiments that they do, they can, because you can scale down anything electrical, you can scale it down and do these experiments on Earth and then scale them up, and that's what you see in space. Well, they do these experiments and their experiments turn out how they expected them to turn out. And when they make predictions of what's going to happen when a probe lands on a comet, Well, NASA was saying it was going to be an icy snowball, and these Electric Universe guys said, no, it's not. It's going to be an electrically charged object. And it turned out that the Electric Universe guys were right in their predictions, and NASA was wrong, and the probe bounced when it hit. It wasn't a dirty snowball at all. And there's loads of predictions like that that NASA have made based on this faulty science that all goes back to Einstein, and they keep getting it wrong, and the Electric Universe guys get it right. And the only reason we have to keep banging our heads against the wall with this faulty science is because they won't accept that Einstein was wrong, because Einstein was a Jew. You know, cleverest Jew in the world that they have to keep promoting. There's loads of information on the frauds of Einstein. I'm sure most of our listeners have probably found that out before.
Yeah, at every single level, it's simply a matter of dishonesty. And that's how that's how we've arrived in the awful situation that we are in today. Basically, it's dishonesty on every single level of the system. Like, for example, I'm sure that Anne Coulter knows about the Jewish problem. Does she speak about it? No, because she's dishonest. I'm sure Peter Hitchens knows. I'm sure Tucker Carlson knows. I'm sure many of the Tories know. I'm sure many of the people on the alt-light or the skeptic community, I'm sure they are aware of the Jewish problem in some way. Do they speak about it? No. And so you just have layer upon layer upon layer of dishonesty on all levels of the spectrum. And then what you have is a world that's built on lies. And when you have a world that's built on lie, I mean, not just the race lie or the JQ lie, but lies within science, lies with our history being messed up, lies on every level, on every aspect of our world. We're just surrounded in this massive, sticky mess of lie upon lie upon lie about absolutely everything. You've just got to work really, really hard to break through all these different levels of psychological conditioning just to get to the truth. And it requires a vast amount of energy and a lot of honesty. And unfortunately, that is the situation that we are in. But truth is a very powerful thing. And I ultimately it can defeat everything. So we just need to, be more honest. I mean, we're stuck in this situation because people are dishonest. Ordinary people, they know what's going on. They know in their hearts they don't want these invaders coming into the country. But they're just being dishonest by not talking about it and not addressing the issue. They're lying to themselves. And I don't know. I don't know how to get to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, we speak the truth naturally, and we yearn for the truth, and we look for the truth. We have a verb to lie, but we don't have a verb to truth. You know, we lie about things, a liar. You don't truth about things. You're not a truther. The natural default setting is to tell the truth. And the natural default setting in the world around us is based on truth. And then you get the organic lie. You get the mulatto, which is an organic lie, basically. It's a distortion of what's natural and what's right. Alfred Rosenberg wrote about this a lot, about the organic lie and the importance of myth and how you find within myth, you find objective truth. And there are truths about the white race that are encoded into these myths that awaken aspects of our mind and aspects of our racial soul by looking into these myths. And these are truths, eternal truths that go right through our race and through our subconscious mind, our collective subconscious. And it's all encoded into these myths. And yet, the way we look at myth today, we've turned it into another word that means lie, as if it doesn't mean the truth. Because we're so used to just looking at material things and looking at things in the way that material science does, that you look at a myth and they just say, oh, well, that's not true. And when you look at the word faith, people think, oh, faith is a belief in something that may not be true. Well, no, you know, faith is an expectation that a promise is going to be kept. And when you look at the world around us, I mean, the world tells me that we can have an expectation that God keeps his promises, that God is there. That's what faith is. It's an expectation that a promise is going to be kept. It's not a belief in something which doesn't exist. That's a Jewish definition of faith. It's a belief in something that doesn't exist. You know, we need faith, and is.
I suppose that's why people say in good faith.
Yeah, faith is intimately connected with the truth. All these things are. All these concepts are the important concepts that are part of being white. You won't find these concepts being discussed in the Negro language. You won't find the word promise in the Negro language or faith or truth. They're all concepts that just don't exist to them. They exist to us. We're getting near the end of the podcast now, Sue, but we've got some good news, which we can let listeners know about. I think we passed our millionth download the other day, our millionth Radio Aryan download, which you can just look at by the page visits, because each one of the pages is an article with a podcast on it. And also there are people that download from other sites besides the Radio Aryan site. So we've gone past a million downloads, and we seem to be going up in the Alexa rankings as well. We're doing very well in the British Alexa rankings. We're around about the 17 millionth most visited website in Britain. We're actually ahead of the Conservative Party. Our website is more popular than the Conservative Party. And globally, we're doing quite well, I think. Four million, something like that.
400,000, I think.
400,000, something. Yeah, we're doing pretty well. Anyway, if people want to check out the Alexa rankings, you can go to Alexa and then put in a website, any website you want, and it will tell you how popular it is. And it's good to get a gauge of how popular our websites are. Daily Stormer is, of course, the most popular one. It was Stormfront for a while. We're not doing as well as the American ones, but we're doing very well compared to the British sites, I think, Subar.
Stormfront, I think, was 19,000. Daily Stormer was 16,000. So, yeah, it's just ahead. But, yeah, we're doing, I think we're number one.
Number one British site? Could be. I haven't looked into Rebel Media or anything like that. But yeah, just looking around the websites, the far right websites, we seem to be doing well. Not say we're at the top, in case we aren't. Hey,
I think Iron March was 200,000. I think David Duke was 250,000. So yeah.
You have to look at the British ranking as well as the global ranking as well.
I was just looking at global because I'm a globalist.
Anyway, there'd be a bit of good news there for us to finish on. You got anything else you want to add before we finish, Subar?
Nope, that's it. God bless you all.
Okay, thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next week with more SS Britannia for you on Monday. So until then, we hope you all have a wonderful week ahead of you.
You are listening to Radio Aryan. For an alternative to the anti-white system on RadioAryan.com.